Okay, sorry about that, guys. We are here, and okay, so people are laughing about the title, and fair enough, it is a little hyperbolic. It's one of those things you do on YouTube, but actually, there's a really specific thing I'm talking about. We're going to get to that later in the show, particularly when we get to our Algorand segment. But it's all going to count. Yeah, we got some chat. We got some people in the chat. We got Corey Chambers in the chat saying Algorand and Polygon are being used by businesses. That is true. I'm going to show you what matters more in a minute. We will get to that segment. Algorand for tokenization, supply chain, government, digital identity, Polygon leading Ethereum layer two for high speed, low cost transactions for Starbucks, MasterCard, and Nike. I'm going to show you what the most important thing is. So we're going to talk about that. And I discovered this. I had a video earlier about no, Abraham's been here. Corey Chambers says probably a bot laughing at the title. Abraham has been here before, and it's okay. You can laugh at the title. I don't mind. It is a funny title. We use these explode buttons, and sometimes you just got to be a little hyperbolic on YouTube. It's just the way it is. It's the way it works. Sorry about the muted mic before. I don't know what happened there. It's pretty irritating. I was playing around with this yesterday. I was trying to do a recorded interview, and I think I got it figured out, but I had something screwed up. And then it kind of screwed up my settings. Yeah, every once in a while, and I probably should have tested this, but every once in a while, one of the devices on OBS just gets kicked off, and I didn't pay close enough attention to the mic tab. So that was my fault, but yeah, we got a bunch of stuff to get to. Obviously, not an exciting time for crypto. Usually the time you should be buying, by the way, although I'd be careful about what you're buying. We're gonna go through that today about why I think that is. So plenty to talk about. I guess we can get right to the markets, and we will do that. I finally had a video take off too. Yeah, things are looking green, so that's at least fun. Kind of a downtrend bump though, really. Yeah, why don't we get to this? Yeah, I gotta move this over, had this set up for something else. Here is our market for today, and we're getting some green candles on the 24 hour, which is always fun. Stocks are coming back up, which is good. And Corey Chambers says buying low usually a good idea. Yeah, but no one does that. I mean, everybody intellectually knows that that's the case. And yet, here's the thing, when it's going up, it feels good to buy. And when it's going down, it feels bad to buy. But that's exactly what you should do. So you have to override your emotions, which is kind of interesting. But yeah, Bitcoin still under 70,000, by the way. I honestly think anything under 70 is a great buy. And I would say if you have, if you're holding Bitcoin for long term, which I frankly, that's what I'm doing. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say what you should do, but I'm definitely buying at these prices and rotating out of some of my losers that I think are just not going to recover. And I'll get into more why. You'll see a chart I'm going to share that I generated that I think says it a lot. But we got Ethereum over 2000. I think there's like some psychological benefit to that. People want to see Ethereum over 2000. XRP pump it back up a little bit. That's nice. BNB as well, a little bit, not a ton. Solana up 7%. Actually dipped down into the very briefly into the 70s, which is cool. Tron, Bitcoin Cash up 10%. Hedera up a little bit. You know what? Let's see who's doing really well on the 24 hour. And it's ones you probably may or may not have heard of: Pippin, Humanity Protocol, Kite, Decred, and Midnight in the top five. Jupiter and Pi are in there. We got Bitcoin Cash. Green Blue says, like Obi-Wan, Bitcoin is my only hope. Yeah, I'll tell you what, that's my main focus. It's the only coin that I'm holding on to and not taking any profit on. Maybe Solana. Actually, I'm trying to build my Ethereum position a little bit too, so I shouldn't say that. But I don't have that in my portfolio. So some people will see some of my moves in more detail in our channel member program. So if you want to do that, you can check that out. I share my crypto experiments on a weekly basis, as well as my portfolio moves. But you can do that if you want. And if you want to support the channel really cheaply, you can just hit the like button. And you can subscribe too. Corey says, pro investors buy low, emotional consumers buy high. That's 100% true. And you got to be very unemotional about this. This is why also I am never going to be a coin maxi. Because I think there's opportunities everywhere. I think if you're, especially in altcoins, that's just a foolish thing to be a maxi in. But a lot of, I'll tell you what, a lot of crypto influencing is telling people what they want to hear. And I just won't do that. Like, I'm just going to tell it to you straight. You're going to get mad at me. People get mad at me all the time. And it's just the way it is. Who's leading the 7-day? We got Pippin, Humanity Protocol, Kite. So leading those three, leading on both metrics. River, that one's a new one. Aster still doing pretty well. Stables up there. Unisa, Leo tend to be a... Yeah, this one has tended to be moving opposite the market. And as you can see, over the 24-hour, it's actually down a little bit. Something called Layer Zero Midnight from Charles Hoskinson and Cardano is up there, as well as Sky. It's kind of funny. You don't see a lot of the, a lot of the coins that we know and love tend not to be on this top or negative list. But let's see. Anyone fall on 24 hours? Yeah, that Layer Zero, we mentioned them. River, Meme Core, like we said, Unisub, Leo, but not much down over the last 24 hours. How about the 7-day? MYX Finance. Now, that was one that had been pumping a lot. That one's back down. Aptos fell a lot, followed by Meme Core, Story IP, BitGet going down. Those are all in double-digit losses over the week. Then we get into single digits, so that's a sign that things are turning around a little bit. Who knows if it will be sustained? Even Canton, I got some flack, I'll tell you, for my HBAR versus Canton video, and this all comes on a theme that we're going to address today around volume and revenue. But we'll get to that. Yeah, XRP is still down on the week. So is NEAR. So is Algorand. Algorand, what do we got? 9.5 cents. I actually skipped my my structured sell this week on Algorand because it was so low. I figured, we can wait till a little bit of an upswing. But a lot of stuff down on the week. Very interesting. Why don't we go to... Let's go to our haystack. And actually, that was the interview I was trying to do. I was going to do a short little interview with John from Haystack and Non-Fungible Domains. And I screwed up because I had my camera on, so as soon as I hit record, it was just too much compute for my computer to handle. And I couldn't figure out what it was, because it wasn't doing that when we were just talking. All right, is that gonna... Nope. Just got to move that over a little bit. I really wish it would exclude these, but we're gonna go down to Alpha Arcade, actually up a little bit on the hour, but still down a little bit. Haystack up. Polkadot really up. Let's see. Corey says, I did well with BTC, now investing time in ICP, vibe coding with caffeine AI. Yeah. We actually had a story about VibeKit being added to the Algorand stack, so you can use Claude Code or whatever to do some coding and do smart contracts right in like Claude Code or Codex, or I haven't heard of Caffeine AI. I might have to check that one out. I've been thinking about getting a Claude account. I like that one. Folks, finance up a little bit. Now, remember, this was up like 20-some dollars or even higher. Tiny over 2/10 of a cent. So that's something, moving in the right direction. I'll tell you what, though. Tiny Man, I was doing really well on Tiny Man liquidity pools with the incentivized DeFi, and then it just went to spit, you know. It just went down to nothing. Like, after they got rid of that and they started doing rewards in Tiny. YCATS in the chat. Thank you, YCATS. Appreciate you being here, my loveliest supporter. Vocoin almost 5%, whereas our everyday Algonaut must be liking that, seeing things going in the right direction. You notice pretty much everything's down on the week except for Haystack. So that's a nice little turnaround, holding kind of steady. The point I was going to make about Tiny, Corey says Vibe Kit for Cloud Code on Algorand sounds useful. Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be pretty awesome. So apparently you can just code smart contracts right in Cloud Code. I haven't used it. I'm not super good with that. Rich Miggy says Algorand will be delisted in spot at Bitcat Exchange. Does this show weakness now in the Algorand team? Well, that's definitely bad news. People do make these decisions all the time. So I guess we'll see. That's definitely not a good thing, but I'll show you why I'm bullish on Algorand, or potentially bullish, in our Algorand segment coming up. And, you know, you'll be able to decide what you think about that. Green Blue says, as soon as I hit the 1 million folks threshold, I'm pulling everything back into self-custody. Fair enough. So the thing about Tiny is, what I've learned about these tokens, you cannot have the rewards be in that token, because it will absolutely crush the price. It just will. That's just the way it works. I've seen it with going back to Townstar when they launched the Town coin. If you got rewards in Town, most people took that and they just cashed it out for money, for fiat, maybe even US dollar coin, or maybe they put it in other crypto, but they didn't have any reason to hold on to it. So what you found is people just took their rewards and they sold them. And that's probably what's happening on Tiny. That's what I'm doing. You know, I staked, I locked up my initial Tiny and I was like, this might be a bad idea. It might've been better just to cash it in. But it turned out, no, I made more staking it than I would have if I just cashed it out. So anyway, that's kind of do we have any real outliers? You know, everything's kind of in the 2 to 5, just under 6% range. I want to look at something really quick before we go. This was my little experiment. Yeah, it's been pretty flat. So a flat can sometimes is really good, though. This is pretty stable, and I'm getting rewards in this token. It does look like it might be going down ever so slightly, but it's actually up 1.6, almost 1.7% on the 24 hour, but down 2%, down 95.8% on the 30 day. Now what happened here, you see this big candle, there was a big mistake where they sent out way too much nugget, like billions, and it just totally crashed the price of the coin. Then it started coming back. So I bought this little crash because I thought, you know, it seems like a cool project. And then I sold out here, actually took a little bit of profit. And then it's a good thing I did, because you know, I had like $30 worth. Now I have $350, $360 almost. But I sold $750, so I made a profit on it. Amstaff Buddy says go all in XRP. Well, I have some XRP, but I don't go all in on anything. That's a foolish thing to do. Green Blue says folks points, obviously not folks token. Yeah. No, that's probably pretty smart. I don't think I have many points. Are they doing more airdrops? Because I didn't qualify for the first one. I don't use folks all that often. I've been lending out a little USDC on it, but anyway, so I just wanted to take a look at this. And yeah, here's gold, by the way. Gold back up a little bit. I was actually down. Well, I wasn't down. I've always been up on gold. So that's the funny thing about gold, is that it goes up and down, and I've been DCAing into it. And overall, I'm still up in the double digits since doing that. And it's only been, what, 3-4 months? So that's been a good little experiment. But let's go on to Saucer Swap. I do want to shout out Haystack, by the way. This is the easiest trading app to use on Algorand. You can find a link in the description if you want to start trading on this app yourself. They have an auto yield feature, which allows you to passively earn on your assets that aren't doing anything. So if they're just sitting there, they'll earn while you hold them on the platform, which is pretty cool. So I've been kind of enjoying that app, and you can and get some nice bonuses if you sign up through my link. So go ahead, check that out. And you can start referring people and then earning a cut of their fees, which is kind of cool. So I just wanted to point that out. I've really liked these guys. I think they've been doing great work. They're the guys behind Non-Fungible Domains, where you can get that .algo address like I have. It used to be what I promoted. Now I promote the Haystack app. But anyway, let's go on to HBAR and Saucer Swap. Just take a second for that to load. While we're waiting for that, if you have not hit the like button already, I would greatly appreciate if you do so. Now, as I've said, you don't have to smash it. You can actually just press it gently and it works just fine that way too. And of course, you are welcome to subscribe to the channel so you can see all of our news. Bron says Polygon is killing it in daily fees lately. We will get to that. We will definitely get to that, because that is part of our Polygon segment, which we are going to talk about today, which we did not talk about, or we tried to talk about on Tuesday in our live stream. We go live every Tuesday and Friday from at 10:30 a.m. Central Standard Time. And apparently I hit the mute button and and nothing was coming out. So we did the whole Polygon segment without any sound. So we're going to redo it today with some new stuff, including the daily fee. So keep an eye out for that. But anyway, back to Hedera and Saucer Swap. HBAR up 4.6%. Like I said, not one of the better pumpers, and we'll kind of talk about why. But, you know, it's up. That's always good. Sauce actually doing a little bit better than HBAR at 5.3%. ETH, of course, is doing well. Dovu back at 6%. I believe we have some Dovu news, or was that last week? It might have been last week. 8BSL, 8%. PAC at 6.4%. GIB, almost 7%. That one dropped. This is a very volatile coin. It tends to drop a lot, and it tends to pop up a lot. Actually, it might not be a bad coin for trading because of the volatility. Let's see what anything else. Karate, that's from the Karate Combat. And that's Lynx. HST at almost 10%. Don't know much about that one. HSuite at 6%. This Dosa coin, I'm sorry, yeah, Dosa, almost 35% up. If you're holding that one, you better be taking some profits. I mean, you don't have to take all of it, but I'd lock in some profits if I were you. This Zarek one too, 23%. That's crazy. Stickbug. I just like that name, Stickbug. Kind of a cute little thing. So that is Hedera. Like I said, I really wish they had 24-hour on here. Or, sorry, 7-day as well as 24-hour. But it's cool that they added this Explore tab, which allows us to do that. So, all right. Well, thanks for tuning into that portion. And we're going to get to, I think we're going to do our Algorand segment first. So we'll start with that. Let me get a drink of water. And sorry, I know people don't like when you drink on stream, but like if I just can't have the mute button on, because if I forget it, it ruins an entire segment. Timurek says FedEx joins Hedera console. Yep, that we will talk about that in our Hedera segment. That is coming, sir. Tom Oliver Fredrickson says Polygon, ADA, XLM all the way. Keep holding and still buying. Definitely buying. I think in the next 150 days, we're going to be pretty much perpetually in a buying zone. I think it's definitely an accumulation zone. My goal is just to have a whole bunch of Bitcoin and some other coins along with it. So that's what we're doing. But we're going to talk about Algorand next. Is Algorand going to lead the path for agentic payments? That is the topic of our talk today, our Algorand segment, along with some other Algorand news. And I'm going to show you why that's going to be really, really important. So I know Sometimes we wonder, like, we have this great technology, but is it getting put to use? And what does that mean if you actually hold the coin? Well, we're going to talk about that on today. So the first thing I'm going to talk about here is Algorand sharing the full support for the X402 payment standard on Algorand. So here it is. X402 is now fully supported on Algorand spec merged with Coinbase. Facilitator live, Bazaar running, tooling ready, build, pay per API, micropayments, M2M, and machine to machine, I think, M2N, and agentic commerce with low fees, instant settlement, atomic payment grouping. Get started below. And then they're going to give you, here's how you can sign up for the upcoming workshop. Now, what did CEO Stacey Warden say about this? She said, Algorand is literally the only blockchain that can merge an early X402 spec so that agentic payments are fully supported. In fact, I would go as far to say that Algorand can't do it. Nobody can. Oh, wait. We already did it. Now, one thing I'll say about these posts that tend to come from the Algorand Foundation is I really think they're very poorly explained. Why does this matter? In fact, maybe I can pull up. I'm going to pull up my own post in my newsletter, which, by the way, is frugalbc.beehive. That's beehive.com. You can get our twice weekly newsletter. And this is kind of what I wrote about. And I wrote about why this is important, because one of the things I think about when the Algorand Foundation puts out these tweets is that I just don't feel like they give you the full story. I don't think they explain these very well. And so I'm trying to do this in a way that maybe makes some sense for people. Okay, so here's what I wrote. Naysayers, large language models and artificial intelligence have come in two conflicting camps. It's either taking over everything and we're doomed, or it's overhyped and doesn't do anything useful. Those of us who regularly find new uses for AI systems are proving the latter wrong every day. We're leaving behind that camp of naysayers pretty handily. But with the release of OpenClaw, formerly ClaudeBot and then MoltBot, it can feel like the AI doomers have a point. Watching them hold conversations in their own Reddit-like forum is a bit disconcerting. For crypto enthusiast investors, however, agents present a unique opportunity as agents navigate the world and start paying each other. Traditional financial rails will just plain be too slow. For fast crypto chains and DLTs, such as Algorand and Hedera, will have an advantage because of their low fees. These chains can handle and frankly will need high volume, which will generate revenue for the chains. And I'm going to talk more about revenue on Tuesday's post. We're going to talk about that today on the live. So Algorand just merged the X402 agent payment standard with Coinbase. It seems the first chain to do so. Now, why does that matter? That could put Algorand in the driver's seat when it comes to AI agentic payments, and that's something that could finally boost prices for the chain and help investors who have been frustrated with the coin's performance. And I have some other news breakdowns, but the point is that using agents are going to need to be able to pay each other in these little micropayments. It's going to have to there's going to be a ton of them. It's going to have to happen very quickly, and the problem is, traditional financial rails cannot handle this stuff. So it's going to have to be crypto. It's one of the first things that where I really think crypto has a huge advantage over traditional finance. There are others, but this is one that's going to be almost universal. And let me tell you, you're going to have to be, this is going to be huge for Algorand, because Algorand is fast. It has really low fees. Now, I'm going to share something else with you. We got some chats about that. I'll get to those. So this is something I wrote earlier. Interesting AI experiment today. I had ChatGPT evaluate chains comparing revenue to price upside. My theory is that chain revenue has more to do with price upside and potential and realization than more than anything else. So it put together a price to earning, it should have been ratio, sorry about that, similar to what a stock would look like. I really got to edit these posts a little more. Well, at least you know they're not AI, right? So Bitcoin is kind of the exception, and the reason it's an exception is because it behaves more like gold. So doing a price-to-earn ratio for gold would not make much sense either, because it's not really an earning asset. But these chains with fees, you know, this is an earning asset. So basically, most crypto ranges from a silly valuation to an absolutely ridiculous one. So you can see this is Cardano's, and it's just huge. Compared to the revenue and the fees, it's off the charts, whereas Tron is actually very low, and so is Ethereum and Solana, because they make a ton of revenue. I think that's pretty interesting. So then I had it put together this chart, and this is appreciation. This is price appreciation compared with on-chain revenue. And so you can see as we move right, generally speaking, and it's not perfect, but as we move right, we tend to get more price appreciation. Like I said, it's not perfect. There are some that are very low, even though they have pretty good revenue. I think this revenue on Polygon is going to increase too, by the way. But as you can see, as fees grow, it tends to grow up in value. Tron has very high fees, is making quite a bit in fees, and is also price appreciated well. So I think that's going to be important. This is why I think having so much having fees, you know, these low fee chains are going to have to bring in high volume to make up for the loss in revenue. And that's one of the things we're worried about in Algorand right now. If it cannot maintain the amount of fees that it needs, like, I don't see how it sustains unless they uncap supply, which I think is going to be difficult for something like Algorand. Because I think the $10 billion cap has always been part of the narrative. And narrative is important. Narrative definitely affects this. This is why some have increased, even though their fees aren't super high. Something to keep in mind. Green Bliss says we should all crowdfund Algorand's entrance into the Chainlink ecosystem, if that's really what is holding it up. I don't think it would hurt. I mean, it's definitely interoperability that Algorand could use. Zach Valenis says, see, many other chains have integrated with X402 payments, so I don't understand what Stacy is saying here. For example, Lightning Network and Solana are fast and cheaper. I believe it's the only one to merge the early X402 spec. There are a lot of ones that are compatible with it or are working on it, but fully supported, I think, is the and merged with Coinbase. I believe that is what is first. Yeah, it's a little bit difficult to parse because definitely I've seen news around X402 on other chains. That could definitely use some better. I wonder if anyone talked about it. And this is what I'm talking about. Callaway says, can someone tell me what X402 means and why it matters? They got to start explaining this stuff. It's just so frustrating. Because otherwise you're talking to like four people. So anyway, that is one frustration I have with just generally how these are parsed out. One more thing for our Algorand segment, by the way. I thought this was kind of interesting. Huge rewards and forward guidance, Alpha Arcade, farming rewards on Alpha. So something new is coming. By the way, speaking of, I have my own, I'm going to find this. I need to find this for you guys. I have my own prediction market, or my own prediction. Yeah, it's my own prediction market. Let's see, Frugal. Here it is. Oop, there's some people. I think some people bought in. Wait, did they? There's some bids. Yeah, there's some bids. It's happening. So I have my new market. Will Frugal BC reach 7,500 subscribers by the end of the year, December 31st, 2026? Right now, it looks like you can only take the no. Looks like some people trade the no, I think, too. Or no, those are asks. But people put some bids on the other side, so... Yep, you can bet whether I will or not. Right on Alpha Arcade, Basically, the easiest way to find it is if you search Frugal BC, you will find my my prediction market, and you can bet on whether I will make it to 7,500 subscribers by the end of the year. So I thought that was kind of cool. If you're watching on the video later, I will drop a link in the comments, but if I remember, I hope I remember. But I think that is all for our Algorand segment. So thanks for tuning in for that. Appreciate that. We got lots of segments to get to, though, so stay tuned. We got a lot more coming. And looks like 26 of you watching right now with 12 likes. So we'd really like to, if you can get those likes up. Really easy way to support the channel, to support what we're doing here, and to help get more people in the chat, more people talking about your favorite coins. Just go ahead and hit the like button. As I always say, you don't have to smash it. Just press it ever so gently, and it works just that way too. Just fine that way too. Let's see. It was nice to see, by the way, my last video is starting to get some decent views again. Boy, the views had really dropped, and on anything crypto just seems to be like dead right now, which is usually a good sign that you should just be buying stuff. Let's see, what's next? Should we do HBAR? Or should we do our Polygon one? Maybe I'll do the Polygon one, because I kind of skipped that one. Hold on, let me share my stream first really quick here. I kind of skipped that one. One second. By the way, we are also live on, besides YouTube, we are live on Kick. Boy, I didn't even look. Do we have any... You short go trade, says MN Club 2. We actually had a Twitch chat. Sorry about that. I keep forgetting to switch it to all chat, but if you're still watching, thanks for the comment. Appreciate that. Kind of neat to have a comment there. We haven't gotten many comments on our Twitch or Kick for that matter. I always get the scam ones on Kick. It's like, grow your viewers by 1300. Click this link. No, thanks. Chainlink, Link, and Poly today. There we go, sharing that one. Hopefully get a little more viewership on. I used to get a ton of viewers on X, and then they just cut that into nothing. It's kind of crazy, in my opinion, but let's see here. Let's get through our Polygon one here. I don't know if I have enough for Chainlink. Maybe we'll do Chainlink really short. Okay, so we've been talking a lot about crypto and X402 and AI and some of the different use cases for them and which chains are adapting it. Now, we just talked about how Algorand was fully integrated into has X402 fully integrated, but we are seeing a lot of use cases around X402, the payment standard for AI agents to pay each other. And I know this stuff can get a little crazy when we talk about it, but here's something. Here's something how Polygon is working on the AI revolution as well, and agentic payments. This is James Lawton. He's relating to devs at Polygon, previously Sequence, Chainlink, Max Planck Society. Opinions are his own. Says he's been deep in the X402 rabbit hole and how it can help monetize apps built by OpenClaw agents to make agentic commerce more sustainable. Most of the apps built by agents have a suite of unauthenticated endpoints with no business model for paying for all those tokens. Rather, devs can leverage scalable infrastructure like Cloudflare Workers or AWS Lambda to deploy their agentic apps and gate certain endpoints via X402 with built-in filters. Humans get to explore the app for free, but bots pay for specific interactions like posting bounties. We built a proxy for CF Workers, implementing just that with built-in API monetization and no fees on the X402 facilitator, configured for fast, low settlement on Polygon out of the box. So you can see one-click crypto transactions with any wallet, any token, across any chain, trails by Polygon. Which, by the way, this type of framing, this is how you should frame things. One-click crypto transactions with any wallet, any token, across any chain. Now I know what it does. That is absolutely, if you're going to sell something in crypto, that is how you frame it. Make it make sense for people. Anyway, I thought this was interesting because we've been talking about agent-to-agent payments and the X402 standard, and here's an app that's using it. But that's not the same. I want to point out, that's not the same as having it fully integrated. Whether that matters or not, you know, that's maybe another matter. But when we're talking about Algorand, it's fully integrated, and that's why I brought that up. That is not all agent-to-agent payments some humans required. Bounty 10 USDC holds sign saying Polygon is for agentic payments. So if you want to earn yourself $10, you apparently can hold up this sign and post the photo here. First human to hold a sign saying Polygon is for agentic payments and post the photo here gets 10 USD on Polygon. So I'm guessing you probably missed that. Does this guy get that? Seems to be the only one who did it too. I think you should say like 10 random people get it or something. That makes more sense. But you can see Polygon is going all in on agentic payments. It's an important thing for them. And like I said, it's going to be an important thing for generating fees, which apparently Polygon has been doing. Polygon chain sometimes earns more per minute than many chains do per day, per month, or per year. So 6.9 million in the last 90 days, that is not bad. Average daily fees, 128,000. Now, there are chains that are doing quite a bit more than that, as we highlighted in our last segment, but that's still pretty good. And agentic payments will only speed this up like crazy, because especially with low fee chains, you need them to happen. You need really high volume. And agentic payments is definitely going to be part of that high volume. It's definitely going to contribute to high volume, which is what you need. It's what you need for these chains to be sustainable. And for your price to go up, as we demonstrated. At least our mic is working, unlike last time when we tried to do our Polygon segment. I thought this was kind of interesting. TazaPay sets a record on Polygon, 687 million in a month. That is a lot. We have integrated TazaPay volume tracking into our analytics dashboard, and the numbers are impressive. In January, TazaPay processed over 687 million on Polygon, becoming the undisputed leader among all payment projects on the network. That's almost twice as much as its closest competitors. And it's way more than MoonPay, which is the only one I'd really heard of. Well, Stripe is on there too. Stripe is on there. Some of these I've like kind of heard of, but haven't really used or know much about. Anyway, Taza dominates business-to-business payments segment on Polygon, covering 137-plus countries with minimal fees and supporting USDC and USDT with instant conversion to fiat. That's important when you're running a business. Like, you don't want to deal with a bunch of like silly crypto nonsense. You just got to get paid. Polygon continues to confirm its position as the most efficient network for real world payment classes. I thought that was pretty interesting. Speaking of, you guys probably know Polymarket. I just shared something about Alpha Arcade on Algorand, but Polymarket, one of the hugest prediction markets around, it's Polymarket and Call. Alpha Arcade has sometimes been a distant third, so that's still pretty good. But another all-time high for Polymarket. Polymarket volume keeps growing. Now, I imagine the Super Bowl had a lot to do with that, but also, like, this is a pretty steady, here, this little spike here is probably the election, and then this is just general growth, I think. because it kind of like starts from August and just starts shooting up. Probably it could be football season too. I know I did a lot of prediction market stuff on football season. I've been doing that now on the NBA, and it's been surprisingly good. My new strategy, I might share that with my channel members. Let's see. Last week, 94 million stablecoin transfers, highest among chains. This is the last week for Polygon. Some really good stuff. We already talked about the 678 million in monthly volume on TazaPay. 1.49 billion in USDC supply, another all-time high. That's a lot. That's more like what you want to see. 1.7 billion on Polymarket, second highest week ever, and 195 million in international stablecoins moved. So, you know, Polygon, the price has been like through the floor, but good things happening at least. And also a big record for European stablecoins on Polygon. They've hit a new weekly volume record of 15.14 million. So not even close to the USDC volume, but still pretty significant, and apparently having a foothold in Europe as well. Is that our last one? Yep, and that's our last one because we had this one about Polygon becoming a U.S. regulated payment platform, which is really cool. But yeah, I think that's just like a good mix of nice news for Polygon. So hopefully we see that volume increasing. Hopefully that will have an impact on the price going forward, because it's been a pretty rough go for Polygon. But you know, I just keep seeing so much good stuff around adoption and use on Polygon. It's hard to ignore. So hopefully that has an impact on price going forward. All right, how is everyone doing? Got two more segments to get through, and we seem to be making a pretty good time. Green Blue said, "You need a non-locking mute button." That would be nice. You know, I kind of wish my mic came with one of those. They call it the cough button. People in radio used to always have them. Because man, you can not have a muted mic. You just can't. So anyway. Let's see here. Let's do Dara next. It's nice that my things aren't getting all messed up. So I shared my stream, and now it's starting to grow a little bit, which is cool. What we'll do, I think we'll do Hedera, because we got that. And thanks, everyone. I know a lot of you have been hitting that like button. I appreciate that. Our viewership is now above 40, which is pretty cool. So keep it up. Keep hitting that like button. It really helps. And you don't have to smash it. You can just press it gently, and it works just fine. Two more seconds. We got Hedera. Yeah, I got some decent ones. Okay, we'll get right into it. Hedera just announced a new governing council member, and it might surprise you who it is. You might see them actually come to your door every so often. I actually usually prefer a different carrier, because they don't make you sign a thing, or they take your package away. But one of the big package carriers in the U.S., where so many bad jokes you can make about that, they're coming to Hedera. They're on the council, and I actually think this could be a really good use case for the digital ledger technology that Hedera offers. So who is it? Let us take a look here. This is right from Hedera themselves. Global logistics leader FedEx has joined the Hedera Council. FedEx brings deep operational expertise to help advance trusted digital infrastructure for global shipments. This will help secure verified shared shipment data across organizations and borders, reducing friction in cross-border commerce. The future of supply chains? On Hedera. So, you know, this is great because I think one of the things we've seen from, you know, Hedera and Algorand, they've been doing a lot of supply chain tracking, a lot of like tracking like carbon credits, that sort of thing. So what you see is that they're used a lot for logistics. So Hedera being used as an underlayer for the logistics of a company like FedEx, it makes a lot of sense. Now, them being on the council, I think that is a signal. I think that does mean something. So I don't think it's nothing, but it also, you know, not all these chains that are on the council are necessarily using the chain in their operations. And it would be nice if we started seeing that, but they do sort of imply that that might happen. We got a little more on this, by the way. This is not the only thing we have to talk about here. FedEx joins Hedera Council to support the future of digital supply global supply chains. So here's just the news. FedEx joins the council to help advance trusted digital infrastructure that can support the evolving life cycle of global shipments and make supply chains smarter for everyone. And by the way, really crucial here because like each package has to be tracked, right? So it's not just like, oh, how many bags of coffee beans did I send from Nigeria to Texas. It's more like, did this particular package, where is it? And where has it gone to from here to here to here? Having digital ledger technology, which is immutable and which is fully trackable online, makes a lot of sense. FedEx's participation in the Hedera Council reflects its long-term strategic focus on enabling global commerce to operate increasingly at the speed of data rather than the speed of paper or physical checkpoints. As supply chains become more digitally integrated, trusted data infrastructure is expected to play a growing role in supporting automation, enhanced digital visibility, and continuous compliance while maintaining strong governance and risk controls across complex international trade environments. In other words, makes it way easier to track stuff in a really complicated world. There we go. Made it really simple for you guys. So through its role on the Hedera Council, FedEx intends to contribute operational expertise and architectural perspective to support open cooperative approaches to distributed infrastructure that enable the long-term digital evolution of supply chains. In other words, they're going to offer some expertise in how this stuff works and how DLT can work with supply chains, including helping advance trusted digital infrastructure for the future of global supply chains, reducing friction in cross-border commerce by enabling secure shared data verification across organizations and jurisdictions. And then we got a little bit about FedEx, a little bit about they will run a node as they all are, you know, supposed to do so and hold equal voting rights. And then we just got a, you know, a bunch of people happily saying, talking about FedEx. But yeah, this is a good get. And it's an important get because it's in a totally different sector than anything on the council right now. Anyway, we got a little bit more. CoinDesk 20 performance update. Hedera rises 6.7%. Leading index higher. Yeah, you can see it did a lot better than a lot of the other ones, even better than the entire CD20. Better than Solana, better than Sui, XLM, ADA, Link, all of them. That might be, and that might have changed now. I don't know, let's see what it looks like. CoinDesk 20 is currently trading at 1943, up 1.3% since 4 p.m. So they have their own little, this is like the full list, by the way, HBAR leading the top of it. Is that Uniswap at the bottom? Even Near was down a little bit. Now, this is when this was posted. That was yesterday morning. So obviously changed quite a bit since then. But nice to get a nice little wind for Hedera. We were off to a hell of a start, but dang, where are my XRP folks at? Pump.games, Hedera, the current leader in front of Avalanche and XRLP. Now, this is the Pump.games prize pool. Your token, your team, join the arena, play for the team, win real prizes. So you join the team, you play and score, play during the arena period, usually 3 days, accumulate scores for your team, win prizes. Your top accumulated score, cumulative score determines the winner, and then you power up. So I don't know a ton about how this works, but it's kind of interesting. Might be interesting to plunk around with this, but Hedera is winning. Can we see the entire... It looks like they're only showing the top three. Is that right? Let's see. You can choose Hedera, XRLP, Polygon, Avalanche, Arbitrum, Optimism, Base, and BNB. And apparently it says select your team. There's the Pack, Dead Pixels, El Santorino, Sauce, Grelf, HBAR, and Gib. Oh, so you got different ones within that. Polygon just says Polygon. XRLP has a bunch. No Algorand, so that's not even involved. Well, if you want to play around with that, it might be kind of fun. What else we got here? We talked about that. Oh, and I thought this was interesting. Cross-chain swaps are live. Cross-chain swaps are now live in Hashback, available in the cross-chain tab. Swap directly between Hedera and other networks. No bridges, no centralized exchange, no middleman. Quick guide, ETH to HBAR, here's how you do it. Select your ETH, swap in HBAR, boom, 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 and swapping back. So we're not going to go through those instructions necessarily, but yeah, it looks like this is really important for increasing liquidity, increasing interoperability. And we just had Para Wallet on Algorand do something very similar. So great to see that on both the chains. And I love the competition. I love the back and forth between these two. I think Hashback has been doing great stuff on the Hedera ecosystem. And Para has been doing that on Algorand too. And I like the back and forth. I like that they're both building. And you know, it's just stuff you got to keep watching, I think. And is that it? Yep. That was our Monday one or Tuesday one. So yeah, thanks so much for tuning in for our HBAR segment. I hope you got something out of that. I think FedEx will be a great addition to the council, and they definitely bring some expertise on a new industry that could definitely benefit from the DLT. So kudos to FedEx and to the Hedera Council for that one. Okay. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. We got one more. We're going to go through some Chainlink stuff, and then I think that'll be it for us. It's been really fun watching the... We're having a good audience today, for sure. Down a little bit now, that's okay. Yeah, it's funny because it kind of goes up and down a lot. The like buttons really help. So, you know, for you guys, the guys that keep pushing that, it's really, really helpful. As of subscribing to the channel also helps a lot. So we appreciate both of those. Let me just pull up. I think our Chainlink segment will be kind of short. Maybe. Oh, yeah, this is a big one. Okay, we got some big news around Chainlink joining a very important advisory council. But before we get to that, Robinhood apparently is launching its own chain, and they chose Chainlink to do it on. So let's take a look at this, because this is a pretty big win for Chainlink. Right here, just in, Robinhood app launches public testnet and partners with Chainlink as the Oracle platform for Robinhood Chain. Builders can leverage Chainlink's data, interoperability, and compliance standards to power advanced tokenization use cases, Robinhood Partnership Chainlink. Did you even know about this, by the way? Robinhood Chain public testnet is live. Developers can now build on a financial-grade Ethereum Layer 2 built on Arbitrum, designed to support tokenized real-world digital assets. So you got Arbitrum involved, and then you have Chainlink providing data interoperability and compliance standards to this new chain. Now, I don't know why Robinhood is starting its own chain. I guess it makes sense because they'll get the fees underlying it, and they've already got the infrastructure, so they don't have to worry about, like, you know, selling it to people. They've already got the platform. People are already on their platform, so it kind of makes sense. Chainlink getting involved in this is really, really smart and very good for Chainlink. Not all the good news, by the way. This is one of the worst written tweets that I've seen. Chainlink co-founder Sergey Narov announced to CFTC's Innovation Advisory Committee. What they mean, he's been named to it. In other words, he's going to be on it. I'm like, what did he announce to them? Oh, I get it. Yeah, just really poorly written, but great news for Chainlink and for Sergey Nazarov. They've got more about this, by the way. Here's the full roster. It includes Uniswap Labs, Coinbase, Options Clearing Corporation, Rothera Markets, Polymarket on there. That's good news. Got a representative, A16Z Cryptos on there, Xebo Global, CME, Bullish, NASDAQ, Ripple, FanDuel, Bitnomial. I love that name. The president of the DCCC, FIA, Kalshi, Crypto.com, Anchorage Digital, Grayscale, Chainlink Labs, ISDA, Paradigm, Etherealize, DraftKings is on there, Kraken, you get the idea. This is a huge Gemini, Solana Labs, Robinhood too, huge, by the way, the Consumer and Federal Trade Commission, I believe it is, and this is a good move. Now here's Algebra saying Algo should be on there, but so here's what Sergey had to say himself. This is the founder of Chainlink, says, excited to join this great group of leaders from our industry on the CFTC Innovation Advisory Committee. I am looking forward to doing everything I can to help provide feedback on the key role of oracles as critical infrastructure for the reliable operations of markets, as well as provide whatever insight I can on how the cryptocurrency, DeFi, and RWA industry can evolve successfully in the U.S. as its primary global hub. Chairman Selig, it has been a pleasure speaking with you during your time at the SEC. I was really thrilled to hear about your appointment to this new role, and I'm very excited about how you and the committee can work together to the benefit of both our industry and the U.S. economy. Thank you again for forming this committee. Well, I mean, that's what you want. If you like a cryptocurrency, you like an Oracle network, you like Chainlink, you want the leader to be in this room. And there's a lot of big names in there, a lot of big crypto names in there. So, Tyler Winklevoss is going to be on there, Vlad from Robinhood, people from FanDuel, and that's pretty interesting. Got two different betting apps that are on there too. Not the only great crypto news, by the way. Bank of England has selected Link to test atomic settlement for tokenized assets. There's a reason why all the institutions tend towards Chainlink. Now, Hedera people would make the same claim, won't they? But there's a reason why. Let's see. All I am saying is when the market turns green, Link will get a lot of attention. He says, Jordan says, no, it won't because the token is not needed. And that is one of the challenges. But I think people are thinking about that wrong, because when the fees start racking up, that's when the underlying coin actually tends to grow in price, as I demonstrated in our earlier segment. And by the way, all that's even the off-chain revenue, which is one of the unique features of Chainlink, is they have on-chain and off-chain services. And the off-chain revenue is often put onto the Chainlink reserve, which has now accumulated 135,000 LINK on the last time, a total of 2 million LINK. So I think that's great. I really do. Just one of the more reasons why I'm a big fan of Chainlink. I think it's a really important part and will continue to be a very important part of the crypto ecosystem. And that is all our Chainlink news. I hope you enjoyed that. I really think it's one of the things to pay attention in this space. Let's see. Green Blue says, depending on how Clarity goes, I expect they will also release their own Robinhood stablecoin at some point. Yeah, probably. Well, I mean, they might not need the Clarity Act because we already have the Stablecoin Act spelling out those rules, although I know there's some debate about how that will impact, yields from stablecoins. Algo is in bad shape right now. Well, I mean, a lot of coins are in bad shape right now. What are your thoughts on Quant? I haven't really thought much about Quant, to be honest, so I don't have much to say about it. And it's kind of cool. We definitely must have got some viewers on Kick and Twitch today. Those are tough nuts to crack, I will tell you what. We had a pretty nice peak of viewers today. Actually, we got a pretty nice group of we got 60 people viewing right now. Only 17 likes, so if we can get those likes up, I think that'd be great. Since we got so many viewers, you guys want to? We had a lot of segments that we got through, but you guys want to watch a little Eleanor Terret to see what she's up to? We'll do that because we got some time yet. It probably won't be done till noon, so I take advantage of having a nice little. I keep forgetting to put my headphones on; it makes me talk louder.
We worked with Securitize. We worked with lots of market participants to make sure they could support Capital I. An opportunity to share. That's what we're doing at SharpLink as well.
Yeah. And then you had number get to SharpLink, obviously, but just staying with BlackRock for just a second. You had other executive roles at the company. You had a 20-year career there.
Yeah.
Personally for you, what was it about crypto and digital assets that drew you to that? And what was the sort of impetus behind really going there full-time?
So I worked with amazingly bright people and innovators for my entire 20 years. The first 12 years was in a business called Aladdin, which was a fintech platform BlackRock had built for global investors to do portfolio management and risk. And sitting there, I had a front row seat on how the market structure worked or didn't work in the U.S. We built systems to help people manage through crazy inefficiencies. So what appealed to me in crypto is this idea that instead of asset trading, T+1 or in Asia, T+2, you can program assets. It can settle instantly. Trusted, built inherently in the system instead of relying on reputation. And I'm old enough to have lived through financial crises where trust broke down because the systems weren't working. So crypto to me was less about owning Bitcoin and ETH as much as it was helping lay the groundwork for a new financial rails. And that's what I'm actually most excited about. I love Ethereum.
Oh, we got double sound going on. Sorry about that. So this guy, by the way, they spelled his name wrong. This is SharpLink's Joseph Chalom, and his name is not having
a relationship with different investors outside of the U.S. And what are the conversations like here?
I think we're seeing a lot of investor types in Hong Kong. And for American listeners, the depth of capital here is astounding. Some of it is family office. Some of it is new money. Some of it is mainland China money that has been repatriated to Hong Kong. And I think we're seeing an interest because a lot of this is generated.
Is that better?
We're seeing people wanting to invest in things like infrastructure, real estate, or in a thesis that's long-term. And Ethereum actually has a very strong following here because there's a view that people can get access to this long-term tokenization opportunity. They see stablecoins going from being a US-centric thing. Now you're seeing yen-denominated stablecoins, Korean won-denominated, Hong Kong dollar, and they feel like this is going to be part of the future. I've been traveling here for a while, and I've never seen more enthusiasm and an understanding that Hong Kong can be the digital gateway for Asia. And I think you're going to see competition from Seoul and other countries locally, but the depth of capital is shocking. And the interest in long-term investing is quite interesting.
What do you think is driving that new interest today?
I think it's geopolitical. And I'm quite direct. You've seen the U.S. government take a very, very forward stance on stablecoins.
Yeah.
Stablecoins are over 99% U.S. dollar denominated. That means that if transactions on chain are going to happen with stablecoins, you're almost seeing a re-dollarization of finance at the same time that most finance is being challenged from a dollar perspective. You're seeing a dollar off trade. The second thing people are realizing is stablecoins in local currencies create massive demand for treasuries. So USDC from Circle and Tether collectively are the 12th largest creditor of the U.S. government when China's slowing purchases and Europe's slowing purchases. So I think there's a view that if they don't get in and be forward and realize that this is a strategic imperative for their economy, they're going to fall behind the U.S. And I think that realization is loud and clear right now. And they're moving forward with regulation, with new licenses, and you're going to start seeing Asian-denominated stablecoins over the next several months.
Mm-hmm. And you think that will compete with the U.S. dollar-denominated stablecoins?
I think finance today is largely about 60% U.S. dollar-denominated. There's a fear that it will be fully U.S. dollar-denominated. And I think rather than compete, if these local economies build digital ecosystems, they will need the local currency to power the money movement, the swaps, and other values. So I think part of it is geopolitical, and part of it is you're trying to build local ecosystems, and you do that with local capabilities.
I could see that too and agree, but also like right now the U.S. is like just kind of the standard settlement layer, so I think that'll probably be... I can see those. I can see more of those popping up for sure, but I don't know about dominating. I think we'll still see the U.S. dollar play the most dominant role as long as it maintains its standard.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about SharpLink. You guys are the second largest Ethereum treasury company on the market today. Last year, DATs really were sort of the biggest trend in crypto. This year, the market downturn is really putting some of these DAT codes to the test. Mm-hmm. Should investors still be confident in the DAT code model? And what are some of the biggest bumps you're seeing in the road aside from the market downtrend this year?
Sure. I think of it, people are already saying we're in DAT 3.0. Can someone find an industry for me that's 7 months old that is in the third generation? We're in like...
Crypto moves fast.
Crypto moves very fast. Yeah. So fine, we're in version 1.5. And if you take a step back for your listeners, the first... V1 was essentially forming the right teams, having a thesis, and then raising capital in a way that was efficient. We've raised $3 billion plus. We have a clean balance sheet. And we own something that you don't see in the crypto industry, which is permanent capital. You see funds needing to provide daily liquidity. You see ventures, investing and trying to farm, inflated tokens. We have raised $3 billion that you can deploy for long-term capital.
Leonard Contrim asks, what do you think of XRP? Well, I definitely own some, and I'm still currently well above my average bias on XRP. So, you know what? Enjoying it. There's been a lot of concern about the disparity between Ripple and the XRP token and how much it's needed. I haven't totally resolved that, but... I'll tell you what, XRP has the most dedicated fan base, and that makes a huge difference in crypto.
The second thing is we've taken on no debt, so we have a clean balance sheet. So I think what you're going to see in version 2.0 is real differentiation. Who has a clean balance sheet? Who has an institutional management team? Who's raised enough capital to get exit velocity? And then most important, put the investors first, how do you actually make it productive in the ecosystem? Rather than do fancy things like buy airplane engines and tokenize them or make investments in media companies, we're going to be the focused and productive DAT. And I actually think when we look back, having permanent capital is a competitive advantage.
Mm-hmm. How do you think on long-term horizons? Because so many people in crypto just think like near-term, market up, market down, that's all they track. But I personally take the stance, and I'm sure you do too, of like zooming out and thinking more long term. So how do you kind of operate on that side and then really get that message out there that, yes, things might be down right now, but maybe not financial advice, it's more, you know.
So I'll answer it in three ways. Let's just be clear for listeners. Since October 10th, or in Asia where we are, it was October 11th, right. We've seen a very significant deleveraging system from the crypto ecosystem. And I've seen this happen, not at this scale, but I've seen the ups and downs five times in my 7 years in crypto. And it always comes back stronger. So the first thing...
Like, bro, get out of the camera. What are you doing? I don't really talk about my... I don't make predictions. I think predictions are... Anyone who tells you they know what it's going to do is a fool. So I just wait for downtrends. And then that's typically where I buy into projects. And when it's soaring, I usually sell off. Except for Bitcoin, I'm just purely accumulating. Cryptophiliax says 100K still equals 1 million algo and puts you in the top 10,000 holders. Wait till they figure that out. 50K in top 2,000, but the numbers are actually more than that because only a few people will be able to. But I don't think that really matters. You need volume. You know, that was the both of every chain needs to think about this, by the way. You need volume to survive. You need volume to make any kind of difference. Volume will increase price. Almost nothing else will. People talk about supply caps. It doesn't matter because the demand has to be there. And one of the best ways that you see demand is how much revenue it's bringing on. For these coins with really low fees, they need much higher volume to make up for the revenue. You know, we can see the revenue and coin price appreciation is absolutely correlated.
The thing I would say is take a deep breath. Don't panic. Don't sell on the low. The second thing I would say is we're going to see a flight to utility. What do I mean by utility? A large part of the ecosystem has been focused primarily on what could they do to drive price action in their token. I think the more important and durable survivors are going to be the people who actually show utility and value. Whether you're a DEX, whether you're a prediction market, or whether you're an owner of Ethereum, who are they going to be the people who are actually going to build the technology and the apps that are going to power the future? I have a very strong belief that Ethereum and its ecosystem is going to be the future decentralized rails for finance. You can think of it as a world financial ledger. And if you believe that, then you own Ether, you make it productive, and you ask people to be patient. It's a highly volatile asset. But if you looked at the greatest tech startups in history, if you actually observe them in the first few months, Airbnb or Google, you would have thought they were crazy. They were too volatile. But it turns out early innovation is volatile. And
he has kind of a good point, except what I would say is when you run the comparisons, crypto's volatility and its early valuation to utility is far worse than venture capital backed startups. Like it's more insane than even the most crazy startup. So he makes a good point, but it's actually worse than he's letting on. It's not a direct one-to-one comparison by any means. Interesting point though, for
and
sure.
And over time, as it mainstreams, it'll become much more of a mom and pop asset to put in a portfolio. Right now, it's a volatile asset, but all crypto and tech startups are volatile. That's where you get the upside. And I see right now, smart money sees the risk reward as actually being really favorable. I won't give price predictions. I'll leave that for my competitors. I think now is a really interesting time to be building and to enter this space.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned being a productive digital asset treasury company.
Yeah,
I think putting crypto on the balance sheet and holding it and just hoping that there's price appreciation is probably a trend of last year.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you guys at SharpLink are doing that is moving that narrative forward this year? I know you guys just did a partnership recently.
Yep.
How are you being a productive digital asset treasury company?
Sure. First, I think we need to distinguish, we followed Michael Saylor, who is a pioneer in making Bitcoin a great digital asset reserve currency. But Bitcoin is not inherently productive. There's no yield.
Right.
So the way productivity happens is through financialization and financial engineering to try to drive yield. And that really works when the price is going up.
By the way, if you guys want to know who this is, I can't share that. Hold on. Let me copy this over really quick. So this is SharpLink. This is the guy behind SharpLink Gaming, which is apparently based in Minneapolis. So kind of in my neck of the woods, pivoted from a sports betting technology firm into a digital asset treasury company, primarily holding Ethereum. As of early 2026, it holds 865,000 Ethereum, which is 2.6 billion, utilizing staking and DeFi strategies. So like, are they still making games? That's what I kind of wonder. I guess, what games do they make? I mean, do they actually talk about, I see the ETH dashboard. I see we're the first NASDAQ listed companies to develop a digital asset, a treasury strategy centered on ETH. But it was a gaming company. This says Miami, Florida. So I don't know. Are they actually in Florida or are they in Minneapolis? Well, anyway, I thought that was interesting to point out.
It's challenged when the price is going down. Ether, the token that natively secures Ethereum, is productive. You can stake it in the ecosystem, secure transactions, and get near risk-free 3% yield. We've been doing it slightly differently than our competitors. First of all, we've been staking nearly 100% from day one. If you have a productive asset, you should be staking it for your investors.
Satoshi says it's time for Bitcoin to be bullish. I guess time to buy. I'm buying. I've been buying Bitcoin at these levels for sure, because I think in the future it's going to be way higher.
And two is, I mentioned earlier we have permanent capital. Term certainty is missing in crypto. You have a lot of fast money. So what we've learned is if you have permanent capital, you can go to protocols in DeFi and you can partner with them, lock up your capital for a couple of years, and in return get a native staking or restaking rate plus incentives. So we're essentially pushing the efficient frontier of crypto. And that is how you raise standards and innovate. The other thing that's really important is, for listeners, if you start wanting to get into DeFi level yields, you're often forced to leave your custodian, go into a Web3 wallet, and take DeFi risk. We did something in raising standards that had never been done before. We worked with protocols like Linea, EtherFi, and Eigen. And our qualified custodian, Anchorage, was the first to support this type of deployment within the protection of a bank-chartered qualified custodian. So think about what I said earlier about raising standards. That is the definition of institutional DeFi. Get higher yields on a risk-adjusted basis, but protect the downside. And in crypto, if you can protect the operational risk, that is ops alpha. And that is the role we should play. And we hope everyone will rinse and repeat. That is a force of benevolent capital. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Joseph, can I ask you
sure.
for a spicy take on
Please.
The DATs in general?
Yeah.
Love the spicy.
Like, how do you really, because there's so many, right? Mm-hmm. And so for listeners out there, when they're trying to decide between them, not financial.
Yeah, there's a ton of them. I don't know. Sailors is probably going to do okay, but I think a lot of them are I don't think they're going to do great. I'd be concerned about like investing in one of these.
Financial advice, but like, Do you think it's become like inundated in the industry and there's going to be a consolidation period, or what is your take on that front?
I think there will be a shakeout, and I think there's probably, you know it better than me, globally probably 100 Bitcoin DATs. In the US, I think there's 7 to 9 ETH DATs, and then you have a whole bunch on Solana, Hype, and a long tail of tokens. I think we're in a moment of, I'm not going to use the word shakeout, but I'll use the word differentiation. Mm-hmm. And if I was an investor and I had a 4-part litmus test, I would ask, have they raised billions of dollars of capital to get that exit velocity and scale? 2, is their stock actually trading on the venue where they are? In the ETH space, there's only a couple who trade with high daily volumes. 3rd is, do they have a thesis, or are they hoping and wishing that their token will get productive and have utility?
I think a lot of them are hoping and wishing, to be honest.
And finally, I would really, really focus on, have they built a management team that can do these capabilities on team, or are they essentially outsourcing this to others who are taking a lot of value out of the system? So I actually want to bring positivity to the crypto ecosystem. I will never FUD. But I will tell you, there are litmus tests, as you asked, for investors. I think we passed those tests. And I actually am hoping that as many DATs as possible are successful.
I think I'd like to hear that litmus test. The Paradigy, says, where is Algorand going by 2030? No idea. And no one, anyone who tells you that they know is full of bananas. So here's what I do is I look at what coins I think are going to be successful. I wait for low periods in bear markets and I buy them. And when they're in bull markets, I sell them. It's really just that simple. That's all there is to it, by the way. Like, people are going to tell you they're going to make these price predictions and they're just Oliver Franchi says no one can tell you until we get to 2030. People will make these price predictions and everyone wants price predictions. I just refuse to do them because I just don't think they're, people will do this silly market cap math and it's just all nonsense because all market cap is it's the price of the coin times the number of coins available. And then, that's your market cap. So people say like, oh, well, if, you know, Algorand had the market cap of Solana, the coins would be worth this much. Yeah, that's how math works, but that doesn't mean anything because that tells you nothing about Algorand's ability to get to that market cap, right? Because you could do it in reverse. Well, if Algorand was $10, it'd be worth the market cap of, you know, Solana or whatever. But it has to actually get there. There has to be a reason for it to get there. So your biggest predictor is, you know, the biggest thing that I've seen is the coins that have a lot of volume and a lot of, frankly, a lot of revenue, they're the ones that actually get you across the line. So that's what you want to pay attention to. Algorand's got a problem with that. Algorand needs way more revenue. And that's where the whole segment I did earlier was on Algorand getting its revenue up based on agentic payments. I think agentic payments are going to be the AI agents paying each other over crypto. That's going to be the biggest unlock for some of these small fee chains like Algorand, like Hedera, all of those. And if that really gets implemented and used a lot, I think you might see a change.
Because they'll be buying the token and that's great for all investors. I think 2026 will see a shakeout and I don't know how that will happen, but I do think you're going to see.
And by the way, I don't mean to sound harsh because, you know, it's a lot of people want to know. I get it. I totally get that. So, you know, I hope you're not thinking I'm like dishing on you, but it's something I'm trying to get through people's heads because I think making predictions is a bad idea and having good principles is far more useful. So I really, if I came across as harsh, I do apologize because I don't think you were asking anything like inappropriate, but it's just where I'm at right now with price predictions.
See less launches and less survivors in 2027. Mm-hmm.
Do you think, because I've read this online and I've had some conversations with some people, it's not my opinion, but some people have argued that DATs were like a net positive, or I'm sorry, net negative mm-hmm. to the industry, completely the opposite of what I was just trying to say. And like, a lot of people, you know, loved Michael Saylor, and now as Bitcoin's price is going down, they're like, this is going to be a disaster. What happens when, you know, it keeps going down and then they are below like their certain threshold of the price? You could say it better than I could.
Underwater, I think is the
thing. Yeah, underwater. Thank you. What's your answer to that?
Sure. I think it's, I want to keep things so simple. If you want to own Bitcoin or you want to own ETH, you can think about it that there's three ways you can own it. If you have the ability to open your own, you know, non-custodial account, go buy Bitcoin and ETH for yourself, but you're taking risks, counterparty risk and the like. You can buy ETFs that have done a great job being an exposure vehicle. At BlackRock, I was proud of what we did. But if you want to own ETH, which is a productive asset, an ETF is constrained in terms of how much they can stake. First of all, for most of the ETF history, they were not allowed to stake and earn yield. And even today, because they have to provide daily liquidity to their investors, and there's a long entrance and exit queue, you can't actually make it fully productive. A DAT, if it's managed well, can stake nearly 100% of their ETH, they can earn the Ethereum staking rate, and if you use your capital properly, you can actually earn additional alpha. So if you want exposure to ETH, it's a beta investment. Come to SharpLink or another DAT. But if you want what we call an alpha overlay, you can only get that from an actively managed digital asset treasury. You can't get that from an ETF. And if you try to do it yourself as an institution, I think you'll struggle. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a very simple choice. We are in a compressed period where our multiple to NAVs are low. That's okay. We're built for long cycles. Mm-hmm.
Is this how you think institutions will be thinking about DATS now from a more active capital side than the passive?
By the way, this is one of the things that comes up with DATS is that theoretically, if the total market cap is less than the NAV, which is the net asset value of the company. In other words, if they own $1 billion of Bitcoin, but their market cap is under $1 billion, theoretically, that should be free money. That should be undervalued by definition. But I don't know if it always works out that way. It'd be something interesting to study a little deeper.
Yeah, look, to be very clear, if you're a conservative investor, you shouldn't be investing in Bitcoin and ETH, which have vols in the 80 to 100. Like, it's not something you invest and hope to get a dividend stock. But if you actually want that beta exposure to ETH for the long run, you want the capital appreciation, but you also want somebody to make it productive, it's an ideal vehicle. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually quite excited. I do believe the next stage will be building operating companies in the ecosystem that can help the ecosystem scale. And the revenue should be ETH denominated. And that will be another way to accumulating ETH on our balance sheet. I still think we're early. You asked earlier about concentration. I don't think we're in a concentration risk problem. I think we're still in the accumulation and building stage.
Is that DAT 3.0?
I'm in DAT 1.5,
okay.
Making my ETH productive and doing the right thing for investors. We are looking at operating businesses that can continue to enhance and can look for our scale. I will tell you the one thing missing in crypto today is liquidity. Mm-hmm. And there will be a role for people with permanent capital.
We've been talking about that, by the way, haven't we? It's kind of the subject of our live today.
Provide liquidity to prediction markets, to protocols, even to insurance pools who need that long-term capital. And we're not looking to hit home runs. We're not looking for highly convex VC investments. We're trying to get risk-adjusted yields and use our comparative advantage. So I think I'm having more fun than I've had in my 20 years in finance.
I love that.
Amazing. Yep. We love having fun in crypto for sure.
Love
it. See that liquidity coming from Hong Kong and the APAC region, kind of going back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the conversation?
Yeah, I think there are net new buyers. I also think there are a lot of OG Bitcoin and ETH owners who were buying when Vitalik was in Shanghai in 2015 and 16. They bought at less than $10. Mm. And I think you're seeing some of that ETH being recycled in the ecosystem. You're seeing some leverage, but I actually think it's really smart capital. And I do think in the long run, Asia is going to be one of the biggest sources of capital and liquidity for crypto, both from fast retail investors, including Korea, Taiwan, Hong Kong, but also some of the largest holders of capital who are looking to get into this space. So I'm actually optimistic and quite excited to be here. I'll be spending more time in Hong Kong and Abu Dhabi. And I'll say this to be spicy, probably less time in Europe for business. It's great for vacation.
Great for vacation.
Yeah.
Where will America fall in this liquidity deployment, do you think?
I think, you know, if you take a step back and you believe that most assets are going to be tokenized, over 60% of the global financial market, it's a $700 trillion market. Over 60% is dollar denominated in the U.S. You see the U.S. largest financial institutions, Fidelity, BlackRock, Bank of New York, Franklin Templeton, not whispering, not giving you breadcrumbs. They're screaming at the top of their lungs. They're going to tokenize everything.
Yep.
So I think the U.S. institutional market will be a leader. I think other countries will catch up. But from a retail perspective, I think Asia is where most of the enthusiasm is. It's a little bit faster money, mm-hmm. but it's really important for the ecosystem. And it differentiates between protocols, tokens, and value.
Mm-hmm. On the show, we talk a lot about policy, so we would love to hear your perspective. What are you watching most closely on that front, whether it's in the U.S. or externally, given that you're spending time out here?
Sure.
Yeah.
I think in the U.S., we're quite excited when the Genius Act passed. Clearly, the Clarity Act has a lot of support, but there's one issue that's holding it up. Who should be able to give yield from stablecoins? And it feels like it's the large banks against Brian Armstrong. It's held up. I'm actually quite confident they'll find a compromise. Or if they don't, the CFTC and the SEC, the two largest U.S. regulators, are actually working in unison. And I think they can achieve probably 80 or 90% of the market structure clarity through rulemaking. And if the policymakers and Congress can't get Clarity Act across the line because of the stablecoin rewards and payments issue, I think the policymaker will get the market structure done. And I think the crypto community is embedding that in the price. And I think you'll see more momentum when that happens. I'm confident either way, even though the Clarity Act may not pass before the midterms. Mm-hmm. In Asia, I was just in Seoul, I was in Japan, and I'm here in Hong Kong. And you're seeing a bit of a catch-up mode where governments are starting to realize they need to have local denominated stablecoins. They need to be able to allow DATs to function and even to launch crypto ETFs. In Hong Kong in particular, they are being quite positive on issuing local licenses, both for exchanges, but also for virtual asset treasuries and for local denominated stablecoins. Mm-hmm. I think the momentum is coming to Asia and they don't want to fall behind. So I'm quite optimistic.
You mentioned the stablecoin yield argument. I've been covering that quite a bit. As someone who sits now on the crypto side, but someone who's had extensive experience on the institutional side as well, you mentioned you think they will come to a compromise. What could that look like?
I was told in life, if you don't know the answer to the question, it's okay to say, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think anybody does.
I think there's enough vested in.
That's what I've been telling you guys. That's why I don't do price predictions for that exact reason. Smart, you know, just be honest about what you know and what you don't
interests
know.
Yeah, that there will be a compromise. I do think the banks are severely threatened by the idea that they have trillions of dollars of retail deposits that are attracting and giving no yield, and smart investors will go to stable coins and you'll see a giant swooshing sound out of retail deposits. I don't have an answer on what the compromise is going to be. Mm-hmm. But if you believe the policymakers can solve it either way, I'm confident that now is a time to be investing back at the lows of the market.
Do you think, are you of the opinion that if there is no Clarity Act passed and the SEC and the CFTC do take over rulemaking, yeah, that there is some risk somewhere down the line that that gets repealed by another anti-crypto administration?
Yep. I believe there are certain things that are irreversible. One of them is technology progress.
Okay.
Can you imagine your consumer experience on your iPhone or Samsung or how you trade on Robinhood getting, you know, reversed? I don't think that's going to happen. And once assets start becoming tokenized and start trading the same day, settling the same day programmatically, once people can own a stock and retail investors can lend it and it's composable, there's no way they're going to go back and say, you know what, we preferred T+2. It's a safer way of trading. So I do think technology cannot be stopped. The efficiencies that are going to come from crypto and digital assets are like nothing we've seen in our history. It's going to create wealth. It's going to create value. I don't think that's reversible.
Okay.
Joseph, aside from everything that we've discussed with you today, what is something that you're paying attention to that you think others should be watching as well?
Yeah. I think we went through a period in tokenization where you had individual projects tokenized and everyone got excited. You know, Franklin Templeton tokenized a money market fund called Benji, and then BlackRock did Biddle, and then our friends at Apollo did ACRED. So you're going like organically one fund or project at a time. What I'm looking for is some asset manager to wake up one day and not tokenize a fund, but tokenize a fund complex measured in the hundreds of billions. I'm looking for the DTCC to start dematerializing some of their custody, tokenizing it on chain, and seeing movements between wallets that we've never seen before. So I'm looking not for like small breadcrumbs. I'm looking for the productivity to come top down where you're seeing massive one-time step functions. And when you see that, you know you're at the right point of tokenization. It's irreversible. So not individual projects, but entire complexes and asset classes. When that happens, there's no breaking, there's no going backwards.
Yeah, awesome. Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
It is my pleasure. I'm super enthusiastic, and I'm really excited that even at moments that look bleak, the actual tailwinds are more positive than the markets are telling us.
I love it. Thank love you it. So much, Joseph.
Thank you, buddy.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, thank you to Joseph Shalom, CEO of SharpLink, for joining us. We're going to take a quick break and bring you on our next guest for Crypto in America. Stay tuned. All righty. Welcome back. Next.
Wait, did it really take a break? Am I wrong about that? They just stopped. Well, all right, dude. We had a really good audience today. One of our best ones in some time. So I appreciate everyone tuning in. I actually got over 80 viewers, which is pretty cool. Hope everyone hit that like button. Anyway, I appreciate everyone tuning in, and this is a lot of fun. Really good chat today. I think we covered a lot of ground. I appreciate everyone tuning in, and so I think keep that in mind. Keep this stuff in mind. You know, you really want to pay attention to revenue on chain. It makes a difference. It really does matter. A lot of people don't really fully understand that. And it's one of the reasons why I think people are confused by what happens in crypto sometimes. But there's a really strong correlation between revenue on, revenue that these chains get and how much they actually make and how much they actually appreciate. So something to keep in mind. But thanks so much for tuning in, everyone. I hope you have a good Friday, good weekend, and we will see you on Tuesday. Remember, if you like this stuff, you can also listen as a podcast on our Frugal BC podcast. You can get that anywhere you get podcasts, Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff. So do check that out. Otherwise, I'm Frugal BC, and I will see you.